The nation's most popular investment talk show is Mad Money.
Big fan of the show.
It's one guy talking stocks, droning on and on.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
And it should make you mad, as in angry or crazy, because you need to hear from a variety of market sources.
Of course, the more the merrier!
You need to get a wide range of ideas. You need some balance. And you need to hear something different just to stay excited about investing in these wild times. This is Money Life Market Call. Different experts every day talking stocks, funds, and more.
You had me at hello, tier.
With experts telling you not just what they're buying and selling, but why. Who cares if it's not the most popular show?
Maybe you didn't have any friends.
It won't make you mad.
This is an outrage.
It will make you smart.
You know, I always find myself being a smarter investor when I get to talk with folks like my guest today, Martin LeClaire. He is Chief Investment Officer and Portfolio Manager at Barrick Yard Advisors. For more information, you're going to go to barrickyard.com and on Twitter at Barrick Yard. But I say that because when you talk to Marty, and he's not alone in this, obviously there are other money managers, it's a very well-defined process. And whether you like his process or dislike his process, as much as anything, the point is always trying to figure out what your process is going to be. And I remember at one point we had Marty on the show and somebody said, I really liked his process because it made me realize I don't have one. Well, then you need to get one. It doesn't have to be Marty's, but it needs to be somebody's because otherwise you're just kind of flailing around. Marty has that well-defined process. Again, barrickyard.com if you want to find out more about how it works. But of course, we're going to tell you how it works. Martin LeClaire, welcome back to Money Life.
Thanks, Chuck. It's great to be here.
So let's start with process because that is always important and yours is very specific.
Well, we like to start from the basics, which is, you know, because we are an investment firm, we like to do something that a lot of people don't do. And first of all, that's to define exactly what an investment is. And we define an investment as any asset that produces income for the benefit of its owner. So, for example, if you own a piece of real estate that produces rental income, that's an investment. If you own raw land that does not produce income, in fact, it consumes capital because you got to pay taxes and so forth, and so you lose money on the venture, and you're just specking, you know, just hoping you'll make money on speculating on the price going up. So we look at the cash flow, and so that's where we start. We also believe that valuations matter. You can overpay for, you know, a great investment and not make money. And you can buy a kind of a crummy investment. And if you buy it cheap enough, you can make money. So the classic example of that would be in the year 2000, a portfolio of three great companies, companies that are just knocking it dead today, Cisco, Microsoft, and companies like that, had you bought them then, it would have taken you 15 years before you would have made any money. So overpaying is a real no-no. The second thing we like for our clients to really understand is that investing is not gambling, only if you give it time. So we acknowledge that in the short run, investing is a gamble because only 10% of the stock market price movements in any given year is a rational response to changing company fortunes. So in other words, sentiment is responsible for 90% of the move in the stock market in the short term. However, over the long term, the value of a company will reflect its price, or the other way to put it is its price in the stock market will reflect its value. But in the short term, 3 to 5 years, the stock market really is what people will pay for it. And you have no control over that.
I love that line. We're going to make that a Money Life quote of the day. Investing is not gambling, only if you give it time.
Exactly. The other thing where we spend time on, and, you know, in the, I'll save your listeners from getting too much into it. But one thing that we really focus on is where we believe investment returns come from. Whether people know it or not, basically they're saying the stock market is the source of investment returns. You know, they're happy the stock market goes up, stock market goes down. They're not, you know, people feel like something's happened to their lives. And we don't accept that premise at all. In fact, the stock market is only a place you know, nothing more than just a place where people can buy and sell companies. You could still buy and sell companies even if the stock market didn't exist. The stock market doesn't give you anything. All it does is it makes it convenient to buy and sell businesses. We believe the source of investment returns is derived from the company's internal value creation. So that's the nut and bolts of our investment process, is focusing on a company's internal value creation. And how does a company create value over the long term? Simple. They have to make money. And with that money, they have to do intelligent things with the profits. So we have this metric called return on invested capital. So long as that number, the money that they make on their profits, so long as the money they make on their profits is higher than their weighted average cost of capital, in other words, what their capital costs, then long term, these you'll compound wealth. And that's really how it works. But the trick is finding companies that are earning more than their cost of capital.
And how does that change when we get to a market that has been at record highs for a while? Does that mean that, you know, because as you point out, price matters, that right now you're having a tough time finding things to buy?
Two answers to that. One is, you know, fortunately, we buy individual securities, we buy individual companies. So we look at company specific. And there are always segments of the stock market where there's work you can do and you can feel good about owning some stuff. The only time in my career, which goes back more than 30 years, where that wasn't true was during the financial crisis in 2008, 2009. But that was one of those once in every 75 year events that comes along. People should appreciate that the last great recession was really a seminal event. It's not something that will come along, if history's any guide, anytime soon. What's more likely is the next bear market will be looked more like what happened after the dot-com boom, or what happened in the 1970s, which is more just a function of, the rug being pulled out of overvalued securities and the herd instinct. So there were things you could buy in the late 90s that held up quite well over the next several years. So we're still finding opportunities in the stock market is the short answer of the convoluted answer.
Okay, well, the longer answer would include what some of those opportunities are. So what are some of those opportunities?
Well, one of the themes that we are thinking through going into 2018 is something that there's a money manager named Jeff Grundlach at Double Line, and he is sort of a bond guru. And one of the observations that he made was that in the late cycle of an economic expansion, and I have no clue as to whether or not we're in the seventh inning or the ninth inning of this economic expansion, but I feel like we're closer to the end of it than we are to the beginning, because the beginning was, in March of 2009. So if you accept the premise we're in the late innings, one area to look to are commodities. Now, the problem with commodities is that because commodities sort of blow away the performance of stocks and bonds in the late stage cycle. And the problem with commodities is that it represents complexity with respect to how do you buy commodities. I mean, probably, virtually no one who's listening to this is going to open up a commodities account because they're speculative and that sort of thing. So one thing a lot of people do is, for example, to get exposure to oil, they might buy an oil stock. To get exposure to agriculture, they might buy an agriculture stock and so forth and so on. The problem with that approach is that these commodities are zero-sum game. So, for example, the price of wheat is the same price as it was in 1980. It's just fluctuated all over the place. And commodity-based companies have a tendency to invest when things are good. In other words, they buy high. And they tend to overinvest and prices peak and then they crash. And then they tend to jettison whatever assets they bought in the previous cycle when the cycle is it's at the bottom. So they end up buying high, selling low, which is the opposite of what you want to do. And the other reason why we don't do commodities is because they don't produce any income. So we just don't go there. There's nothing to compound. If there's nothing to compound, we're not interested. However, there are these things called royalty trusts and royalty companies. And what they are essentially financing companies. But what they do is, so let's say you are a gold company and you want to exploit a mine. Well, a royalty company will say, okay, I will pay you money for the gold that you take out of the mine over the next, let's say, 20 or 30 years. And what we'll do is we'll use today's price for gold, but we'll discount it at a certain rate of return, let's say 15%. So that means whatever gold you contract to buy that comes out of the ground in, you know, 5 or 6 years from now, you're going to be paying $600 an ounce because you've discounted it. So it's a way to get exposure to gold directly. You have downside protection because every year that passes, you end up paying less for an ounce of gold, and you hit a home run if the price of gold were to go up, for example. And royalty companies also tend to pay dividends. I mean, we don't buy, and they're not leveraged. So in the oil and gas business, for example, you can own a oil and gas trust, a royalty trust. They have no debt on them, and basically, the employees is just a law firm that administers the terms of the trust. And a lot of them are paying, they're very, very sensitive to the price of oil, but a lot of them are paying 6-7% right now. Now, a couple of years ago, when the price of oil fell out of bed down below $30, some of them, you know, cut their dividends by, right, you know, 100% or 75%. But the fact that they have no debt on them means that, you know, they just sit there as a dormant asset. So it's a way to get exposure to commodities without, taking the risk.
Now we're going to find out how you feel about some stocks that my audience is particularly interested in.
Play, hold it.
You got to know when to hold up.
Or fold it.
Know when to fold up.
It's Hold It or Fold It time with Martin LeClaire. He is President, Chief Investment Officer, and Portfolio Manager at Barrick Yard Advisors. BarrickYard.com. At Barrick Yard on Twitter. We're late getting into Hold It or Fold It, so you know how it works. We're just going to jump right in, but send us your requests if you have them. One person who sends us requests regularly is Rich in Orchard Beach, Maryland. We're starting with two of his requests today. The first is STOR. That's Store Capital.
Store Capital is, I think, is a decent investment. It pays a dividend of over 5%. They have a very interesting business model. It's a $4 billion market cap company, but they have very little research on it. So not very many people know about it, but it's a real company. They have an investment grade credit rating. What they do is they own roughly 1,800 properties, and they're fairly small properties. They're commercial properties, and their average price is less than $9 million a property. They're net leases. So they pass on the cost of the real estate, maintaining the real estate to the tenant. So, if you want a decent income-producing investment, you know, it's paying you 5%. That 5% will probably grow by 5% a year. I think it's a good thing.
Oh, yeah, beautiful. We could make a fortune.
That's a buy on Store Capital, STOR. Rich's next request today, Ford Motor Corp, ticker symbol F.
The problem with Ford, because it pays a nice dividend and it's stable and so forth, is a couple of things. One is so much about investment is about numbers, but then there's the quantitative thing. And the issue that we have is that Ford and some of these other companies are on the cusp of having to deal with potentially a transformative technology in the form of self-driving cars. And there's a very credible case to be made that within 5 years, in the same way that between 1900 and 1910, people went from driving, you know, having horses to driving cars. Cars will be seen as a liability, not as an asset anymore. And so, Ford has a lot of debt on its balance sheet. So it just seems like there are too many unknowns, and I would stay clear of it.
That's a sell on Ford Motor Corp, ticker symbol F. Brent in Chandler, Arizona wants to know about Corrections Corp of America, CXW.
Well, the fact they had to change their name to Core Civic Corp, that's what they're called now, kind of speaks volumes. So a couple things. One is it has recently significantly cut its dividend. Its business model, basically, they're you know, a private prison provider. And so their business model in the age of Trump may prosper, but who knows? Their business hasn't been doing very, very well recently. They had to cut their dividend. I would stay clear of it because of the reputational risk and the fact that, there could be a groundswell of support politically to take over these prisons again. I mean, there's a lot of controversy around these private prisons.
Oh boy, that sounded bad.
That's a sell on Core Civic Corp CXW, the former Corrections Corp of America. Joe in Colorado Springs wants to know about Universal Technical Institute, UTI.
Well, this is a company that has had negative cash flow for several years. I know the stock looks cheap. It's, under $3 a share. Back in the day, it was, a $25 stock. I would definitely not own this thing. I would run away.
Put that one on the psycho list.
UTI, Universal Technical Institute, they teach you how to drive trucks. That was a sell. And last, for Tom, in Louisville, Kentucky, it's Molson Coors Brewing, ticker TAP.
So the problem with big beer, for want of a better term, is in the developed world, there's no growth. And there's a switch away from the Coors your daddy drank and the new generation who wants the craft beers. A much better choice is Anheuser-Busch, BUD, Anheuser-Busch InBev, because, first of all, they have a much better distribution system, and they're better positioned in the United States to take advantage of the shift from traditional developed world beer into the craft world. But more significantly, Bud has 40% of the revenues coming from the emerging markets, and there's real growth there. Just a quick statistic, 40% of the beer in Africa that's consumed is still a homegrown brew. So for Africans who are becoming richer, an aspirational drink is a bottle of beer. So, and also the financial metrics are much better for Budweiser. Their pre-tax margins are 60% versus 20% for Molson. It's a much better play. In the interest of full disclosure, I recently been adding to my Bud.
Okay, so we like beer.
Beer.
But it's got to be Budweiser, BUD in this case, because when it comes to tap, Molson Coors Brewing, it might make you a little ill. So sell the tap, buy the Bud. That's the message we got there. Martin LeClaire, thanks so much for joining me on the show.
My pleasure.
Martin LeClaire is the portfolio manager and chief investment officer at Barrick Yard Advisors. It's barrickyard.com. On Twitter, @BarrickYard. We'll be back to wrap up today's edition of Money Life right after this message.